Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. This is commenting about Russia's foreign recruitment, as in duping people into joining their army. So obviously Russia suffered high casualties, at least 1.2 million casualties since its illegal war of unprovoked aggression began on the 24th of February, 2022. And it's burned through a lot of manpower. I mean, of those 1.2 million casualties, probably only around 25% are killed. So they'd obviously like to minimize their casualties, part by getting other people to get killed. Their strategy doesn't seem to be to conserve manpower and indeed woman power by only attacking when it's very well supported, only attacking when the casualties won't be too high, is the so-called meat attacks, people they consider runts, just dispensable, just to throw their lives away. And the prison recruits, so they persuaded and in some cases coerced people in prison to join by, you know, turning off the heating in the cell. You didn't sign a contract when it's minus 20, things like that, beatings, and told that they their sentences would be written off, their criminal records would be wiped, 1 year service, and then you get out, stuff like that. Okay. And then huge sign up bonuses worth several years' salary in some poverty-stricken regions. Very little of that in Moscow and St. Petersburg. Obviously, the average salary is much higher in those two cities. There's huge inequality between the regions. You know, Russia's got 85 federal subjects, including the four illegally occupied ones that are in Crimea, and particularly getting ethnic minority people to join. Remember, Russia's got dozens of indigenous ethnic minorities, like Chechens, Ingushetians, Dagestanis, Lezgians, not lesbians, Kalmucks, Boshkirs, Tatars, Komi people, Buryats, Yakuts, Chukchi people, and so forth. And indeed, guest workers from the erstwhile Soviet Union, particularly Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan. So those Central Asian countries, the last two, the poor from the former Soviet Union, the first two rich in oil and gas, but almost all of it goes to a tiny clique around the kleptocratic president, and then a few people from China or wherever, people from former communist countries like Cuba sometimes feel some sense of brotherhood with the Russian Federation, which Putin pretends still embodies the egalitarian spirit of the Soviet Union. But then they're looking further afield to recruit by advertising people from Kenya, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, India, Pakistan, Nepal, Yemen, Syria, Sierra Leone, Eritrea, Somalia, to come and fight. Significantly, they've made visa-free travel for some people from several African countries. Now, there's a lot of overt racialism against black people in Russia. I mean, I knew a few Africans in Moscow. And not everybody is racist. That would be a racist thing to say. There's some Russians are just as disgusted by racialism as I am. And those have misfeelings to those who are just vilely racist. But it's not called out as it would be in this country. Even I, as an Irishman, as a Briton, had a trouble renting a place when I was in Moscow. So why would they want more black people there is really then to strong arm them into fighting. Then women often into working in drone factories, very long hours, the salary's not what they promised, and they can get their huge deductions for the slightest thing wrong. Okay, so there's been increasing exposés. So targeting people from less economically developed countries like Yemen, which has had a civil war for decades, partly then they might battle hardened, not that shocked by violence. And these people are just dispensable. And these are countries without a lot of diplomatic clout, without a lot of economic power, and not likely to be able to get them back. So it's thought that over 20,000 people have come in from countries, and not just the North Korean troops, which the government sent. Okay, and often it's illegal to recruit people for fighting abroad, including in Nepal. And some of these countries like Nepal have got a centuries-old tradition of men volunteering for foreign armies, the Indian Army, the British Army, and stuff like that. And if you didn't get into one of those, well, why not the Russian Army? But often told you'll just be a security guard or as factory worker, something like that, or you'd be doing construction work in occupied Ukraine. And when you get there, given a contract in a language you can't sign, promise you'll get citizenship, we'll take away your passport to help expedite the citizenship, you don't get it back, i.e. you can't leave the country. How are you going to get it back? How are you going to apply for a new one? It was lost or stolen. You have to contact the embassy, but you might have no access to a mobile phone. You've got no funds, and. Orders screamed at a new language you don't understand. A few interpreters often doing it via language like English. They're not going to be able to speak Somali and Nepali and so on. One Nepali was captured by the Ukrainians said, when they go towards the front, that the Russians are saying, send the Nepalis first. I don't know how I understood that bit. But figured it out, because you know, let them stop a bullet. They will distract the Ukrainians, will pick out their positions, then our drones will hit them, and then the main attack will go in later. So it's terrible. So don't go. Promise these huge salaries, and obviously from countries with very poor economies, these can be very alluring. And in Russia itself, they can't afford to pay these huge sign-up bonuses. Those who are most inclined to sign up have done so, and people realizing that volunteering for the army is little more than a death sentence. You'd be lucky if you come back merely wounded, and okay that some of them do survive, and so forth. So at least 400 Yemenis have gone to this, and so obviously they're begging to get out. How can they be rescued? So because when Russia, they used agents in the Middle East to trick Indians to go into Russia, thinking that they're going to do other sort of work. But then they found themselves forced to fight in Ukraine. And then they managed to get messages back to the Indian embassy. Narendra Modi interceded. Remember, India is officially neutral in this conflict, but has benefited from a lot of cheap oil from Russia. Narendra Modi's even visited Moscow. And so keeping India on side is important for Russia. If India were to go the other way to sanction Russia, that would have a major effect on Russia. So Narendra Modi said, would you please repatriate these guys? And almost all of them have been able to come home, because, you know, 100 more soldiers is not going to make a significant difference. Losing the friendship of India would, plus it's a diplomatic coup for Narendra Modi. As Putin's got a good relationship with him, no need to clear the pitch. Remember, the Indians rolled out the red carpet and gave Putin a state visit, the supreme expression of friendship between sovereign states during this war. Anyway, but some of the Yemenis are the part of the Shia minority, often supporting the Houthi rebels, which of course Iran supports, and Russia's got a fairly good relationship with Iran. At least 24 Yemenis have been killed. Some of their status is just unknown, and so on. So it's got almost no oil and gas, one of the poorest countries in the Arabian Peninsula, well, the poorest country, and so on. Egyptians, Senegalese, Sri Lankans, and so on. So, yeah, they've suffered terribly, and some of them have been taken prisoner by the Ukrainians who said what's happened, and the citizenship's not been granted. I mean, Russia, I mean, putting morality and legality aside, what I would obviously do is genuinely give them that citizenship on day one. And the message go, you will get citizenship. So, you know, this man after the war can live there, his wife and children can live there, and blah, blah, blah. Russia's in a demographic death spiral. Are they so racist they're not going to do it? Even people from the former Soviet Union who speak fluent Russian, maybe even native speakers of Russian, even they find it difficult to get citizenship. Often it takes 10 years. A lot of bureaucratic hoops to jump through and paying loads of money. I mean, when I worked for a major Russian insurance mogul, I said, do you know any people from the former Soviet Union who've acquired Russian citizenship? I knew one Uzbek accountant after some years managed it. And Russian citizenship, if you're coming from an LEDC, is actually surprisingly alluring, because the poverty in Russia is relative. Even the poorest people have enough to eat. They get free health care and so on. The children get to go to school till 17, blah, blah, blah. Everyone has running water. Everyone has electricity, which is not a given in some of the less developed countries. So I suspect Russia will be accelerating these efforts, as they just don't have as much manpower, as the war risks becoming unpopular. There's another wave of conscription. And then they think, well, just conscript people are just not economically useful, but there are major labor shortages. We conscript someone, but then he's more useful doing something else, you know, as a mechanic repairing buses or working in a factory. He's quite skilled or foreman in this or that. In construction, we can't afford to lose these people. We'd rather another nationality get killed than our own. I'm surprised the Ukrainians don't do the same. One thing is they could do is try and persuade these foreign prisoners of war to change sides. So unlike the Russians, we're not going to abuse you, and we'll give you citizenship on day one, and we'll pay you the salary we promise, which they never do. So anyway, I feel sorry for these people who believe these lies. So don't make sure you don't fall into that trap yourself. Never, ever trust the Russian government is the moral of the story. Well, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Don't know, PayPal, George Carlin 79 at gmail.com. Goodbye.